Cause number 13-18-086-CV, Carlos Gomez Amaya versus Bissell Home Care, Inc. You may begin, Mr. Sierra.
This case has had a somewhat tortuous history. I'm not really exactly sure if I understand everything that happened before I got involved just with the appeal part, but if I can just briefly try and put us where we are today. My client, Mr. Amaya, worked for a company in Mexico, and to make it simple, I'll just call that Bissell Mexico, which was a subsidiary of Bissell Michigan or USA. He never worked for Bissell USA, worked strictly for the Mexican company in Mexico. At some point, Bissell brought a lawsuit against Mr. Amaya on behalf of themselves and on behalf of their subsidiary, alleging various causes of action, fraud, embezzlement, things of that nature.
Counsel, let me interrupt you there. It appears to us, by looking at what was submitted to us as far as record, that there's no underlying record submitted to us about that underlying lawsuit. So how are we supposed to determine jurisdictional issues relating to that earlier lawsuit when the record in this case, or in that case, is not included for us to review on appeal? Because basically that's what you're complaining about, that they got a judgment against him, or the American company got a judgment against him, but yet in the earlier case, but yet none of that is before us because none of that is in the record before us in this case.
Well, that's not exactly true.
Please correct.
We're not actually, for purposes of this appeal, we're not actually dealing with the underlying judgment from two cases ago or whatever the cause number was before.
Well, but how
this
can
is about the bill of review challenging that judgment.
Well, but how can we even make a determination on a bill of review? The elements, because we have to look at the elements of a bill of review, if without a record of the underlying case.
Well, in this record, the judgment's in there of the underlying case. But
your argument is that there was no standing.
Correct.
So that standing was as it related in the original lawsuit, isn't it?
Right. The original judgment, correct. And then when the bill of review was filed challenging the underlying judgment, that's where the complaint is on how the trial court handled that bill of review. The judgment itself, like the amounts and so forth, I don't think are really necessary for purposes of why or if the bill of review should have been dismissed.
But your meritorious defense, which you would have to show in the bill of review, is the standing argument. Is that correct?
Right. So, exactly. There's two things going on there. Under a bill of review, as your honors know, it's kind of like a three-prong test, kind of like a motion for new trial. Meritorious defense, second, no fraud or wrongful act on behalf of the opposing party. Also, accident is part of that second one. And the third one, no negligence of the plaintiff in the bill of review on himself or by the lawyer. Now, we believe, although it's thin, I have to admit, that the bill of review that was filed hits the three prongs of the bill of review, which is meritorious defense and the other two prongs that I mentioned.
Well, can you tell us what that meritorious defense is?
Well, it was jurisdiction. It was standing. No jurisdiction was what was the defense to the under, and as you know, also jurisdiction can be brought up at any time. But it was still brought up within the 4 years of the bill of review. I mean, the bill of review was still filed within the 4 years. There's no issue that I know of in terms of the timeliness of the bill of review. So under the bill of review standard, that it's our position, number one, that we meet the three prongs and that the case should have proceeded to trial on the bill of review. Or alternatively, more strongly, that the meritorious defense being the jurisdictional issue, which standing is kind of the same thing, goes together.
Well, jurisdiction and standing are not the same thing, Sarah. Well, so the argument is you're attacking the judgment and what this trial court found, and that we're reviewing the standard of review as a de novo review, is as a matter of law, have you met the three prongs of the bill of review? And the question becomes, did you present enough evidence to overcome that on a meritorious defense, and whether it be jurisdiction or standing? So it goes right back to Justice Inhofe's question, how do we establish that if we have no evidence and we're bound by the record before us? If you didn't present any evidence, then they win on the summary judgment.
Yeah, it was in the summary judgment that the court granted, it didn't say anything about standing. In fact, when they had the hearing, the judge asked for additional briefing on jurisdiction and standing. And after that additional briefing, he just signed the motion, an order granting the motion for summary judgment. And it doesn't lay any grounds or anything. It just says, you know, that the MSJ is granted and the bill of review is dismissed. Before I forget, though, that if it's also our position, though, is that if there was no jurisdiction to on the underlying suit, which would come out in the bill of review trial, then the other prongs are kind of moot. You don't need to meet them. So we argue we meet them, but the jurisdictional issue, that should have, the trial court should have at least let it go to trial in the hearing on that issue, but that's not what happened. In fact, in the MSJ and in the brief that opposing party filed related to that MSJ, and in their brief filed in this court on this appeal, they don't say anything really about standing. They just say that my client, through his previous lawyers, raised that issue multiple times. It was in federal court, it was in county court, there was a motion filed for forum nonconvenience, and all those motions were all denied, where Amaya was challenging whether the court even had jurisdiction. See, that doesn't really matter, because that's why you have appeal. It could have been denied 10 times somehow in the underlying suits.
Well, why wasn't it appealed in the underlying case and dealt with at that point? If he felt that the judgment against him obtained by the Mexican company was erroneous, why didn't they appeal that and deal with it, since he was represented by counsel? I mean, I guess most bill of reviews that I come across have been situations where it's been a default judgment obtained, but here it was fully litigated in state court and federal court and county court and district court, and the issue apparently was raised, and we really can't tell because we don't have a record, but let's make that assumption for your benefit. How is that now an issue that can be brought about via bill of review without having been brought up in the initial case?
Well, I, like I said, I can't speak for the other lawyers. I wasn't involved.
Sure.
I don't know what the rationale was for how it was handled. I came in after all of that all happened and said, can you do something? Well, if there's no jurisdiction, that can be raised at any time within the deadlines, and the deadline for a bill review is 4 years, and the bill review was filed, you know, timely. In the MSJ, and at the hearing on the MSJ that opposing counsel filed, it didn't contain any proof or evidence about whether or not there was jurisdiction. In fact, the court was operating as if that particular defense or issue raised about no jurisdiction was a given. And that the reason he asked for additional briefing was because he wanted to know if I give you that there was no jurisdiction and the original court couldn't do anything, shouldn't even heard it, shouldn't have had MSJs in those courts, shouldn't have been a judgment, nothing. But if I give you that, the briefing that he wanted was because no one had any case law or knew the answer of whether after you say that there's no jurisdiction, do you still have to meet the rest of the two prongs of the bill review prong, because it hadn't come up. And from the hearing transcript that's part of the record of that MSJ, he asked for both sides to provide additional party, because I think there was reasons, well, I know there was, it was comments to the effect that it might be a case of first impression that if you find the jurisdictional issue valid in a bill of review, do you still have to go through prong two, prong three?
Well, I think that the answer to that question is yes. I mean, the statute is very clear and the law is very clear and has been for a long time that the plaintiff, i.e. who's presenting the bill of review, has to show that it had a meritorious defense, and that they somehow were precluded, which is the second prong, of making that argument. And going back to Justice Inhofe's question is, how do you get past the second and the third prong? Let's give you that you have a meritorious defense. How do you get past the second and third prong that you weren't, because it was litigated in four different courts, and how is this not negligence on part of the behalf of the plaintiff, which if it's any part of negligence of the plaintiff, you can't bill a bill of review. The cases are supposed to go judgments, appeals, then. Bills of reviews are in very unique scenarios where something has gone wrong in the trial level, and so we're trying to collaterally attack the judgment. But these are supposed to be exceptions, not the rule. So well, how do you get past the second and third prong, even if we get past the first prong?
Okay.
How is it not your fault?
Right, well.
And by you,
true.
I don't mean you.
That's true for the record.
And by you, I don't mean you. I mean plaintiff in general in your defense.
And as part of that answer, you may address the argument that they're making, the allegations of fraud that you have made are extrinsic fraud as opposed to intrinsic or the other.
Well, that's what opposing counsel was arguing under the second prong. So the answer, my response would be, there's two responses. One is that under the case law that I was able to find, and it's in my brief, that states that when a bill of review complaining collaterally attacks a judgment on the ground that is void because the trial court lacked jurisdiction to render it, meaning the trial court before didn't have jurisdiction to even issue the judgment that is the underlying basis for this whole situation, then the complainant is not required to prove the rest of the elements of the bill of review and cite a case. And that would kind of make sense to me, because if you give the first prong that there's no jurisdiction, what's the point of two and three when that right there kills it, which, as I stated before, you can bring up at any time, kills it, and the trial court had no jurisdiction to render the original judgment. There wouldn't be a reason to have to go through prong two and three when that first one is like an ace in the hole and says, hey, there was no jurisdiction to even get here. So, you know, then we get into the other two prongs about, you know, negligence and so forth, which my client had an affidavit, you know, that, and it's in the record, but, you know, that his lawyer didn't tell him there was discovery, you know, he didn't know, and so forth and so on, which comes under mistake or accident, and that he himself, although there's case law kind of going both ways, he himself didn't do any negligent unless you're going to impugn it to the attorney. But that's why I was arguing that once you hit prong one, that there was no jurisdiction to even start. It ends. That's it. It doesn't matter what the basis was for the judgment, which in this case was discovery that my client never answered because he testified that he didn't know about it.
Okay, your time, so first 15 minutes are up. You'll have a little more time in rebuttal, so let's hear from Ms. Cole.
Thank you. Boy, that went by fast.
Time flies
not
when
like,
you're having
it's
fun.
Not like district court where you on.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Allison Colvin. As I previously mentioned, I represent Bissell Home Care, Inc. One thing I'd like to point out procedurally, obviously this case has a very colorful procedural background, but the judgment for the MSJ that was granted back in 2009 was a judgment for two plaintiffs, Bissell Home Care, Inc. and Bissell Mexico. Bissell Mexico is not a party to this bill of review. And so we're only dealing with Bissell Home Care, Inc., and we're only dealing with the aspect of that summary judgment order or judgment that that the appellant is wanting
was
to set
aside. Was the judgment
originally
in 2009? Because that was going to be my question. As I saw the order, it only says Bissell Home Care. So the Mexican subsidiary corporation is completely gone from this appeal.
Correct. So okay. The 2009 judgment is for plaintiffs. And plaintiffs at that time were Bissell Home Care, Inc. and Bissell Mexico. And so,
but the attack of the bill of review is only the portion of the judgment as to Bissell Home Care.
Correct.
Okay.
But you say a portion.
Which makes it even more confusing.
Yes. Well, I was confused.
It's not split in any way or anything, is it? I mean, it's something that they own jointly, or how is that determined?
I'm sorry.
Well, they received an award of $1.7 million, some odd.
Both parties. Did.
So Bissell Home Care, Inc. is the parent company of Bissell Mexico, a wholly owned subsidiary.
Okay.
So the damages are the same.
So even if we were to say, to agree with Mr. Sierra and throw Bissell Inc. out, the Mexican company still owns that judgment.
Correct. And it's still a viable company that can execute on that judgment. So even though Mr. Sierra is asking for this judgment from 2009 to be void, it can't be void completely because there has been no appeal on behalf or against Bissell Mexico and no bill of review in regard to that entity.
Okay, but then I guess I can clarify it with Mr. Sierra when he comes back up. But are they seeking to void the whole judgment by using this argument that the judgment is void because the judgment was in favor of a Mexican company that had no standing? Are they seeking to set the whole thing aside?
They meaning appellants?
Yes.
That I don't know, and I don't see how they can do that at this point because they've lost their past plenary power for an appeal and their past statute of limitations on the bill of review.
Okay.
So we're dealing with two entities. I just wanted that to be clear to the court. I did set forth in our response that we did meet the three prongs of summary judgment for the bill of review, understanding that appellant is arguing that there's no standing. However,
would you agree with me, Ms. Colvin, that we're reviewing this on a standard of review, a de novo, because a de novo is usually when we're just reviewing a bill of review, it's an abuse of discretion. But since this trial court granted a summary judgment, we're reviewing it on a de novo review. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
And going to the first point, which is the meritorious defense, we presented evidence to the trial court during that summary judgment hearing. I put as my appendix to my brief in response the transcript from that hearing. And the court found, based on that hearing and subsequent briefing, that Amaya had not met the requirements, had not proved a meritorious defense.
Let me just stop you on just a housekeeping matter. You say that you included a voluminous appendix to your brief and included exhibits of your MSJ. Are those items actually in the court, in the clerk's record? Because we were not able to locate them in the clerk's record.
From my MSJ?
Yes.
So in response to, because appellant made that argument in his brief, mm-hmm. that they were not properly before the court, which is why I received the transcript, which is attached to my brief, from that hearing, where it says that I'm actually handing the physical documents to the court for consideration. There was no objection to the exhibits. They were presented then, but they were also e-filed, which I also argued
I understand what you're saying, that you presented it to the underlying court. I'm just wondering, is it part of our record? Was it something that was part of the clerk's record that was submitted to us for us to consider on this appeal?
So it was not part of the clerk's record because they didn't download the exhibits. So they were e-filed with the court. I clarified that after I received the appellant's brief. But they are attached as part of my appendix to my response brief.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter if it's attached to your brief, because that doesn't make it part of our record. Part of our record is only what's in the clerk's record. And the clerk does have your motion, but doesn't have the exhibits attached. And we're bound only by what's sent to us by the clerk's office. So the question becomes, are we missing critical evidence that would substantiate us when we review it de novo that you had the proper evidence before the trial court? We can see it. We can see it in that it's in the transcript, but we don't have those exhibits in our record.
Sure, and I understand that, and I don't know if it's a part because of the new e-filing system, but the clerk confirmed that she received the exhibits. They were just not downloaded to the point that then they were put into the clerk's record. So I don't know what the result of that is. However, even taking that evidence set aside, our argument is that appellant did not meet the requirements of the bill of review in that trial court. He did not prove a meritorious defense.
So you don't agree with Mr. Amaya's argument, or the Amaya's contention, that he doesn't need to prove the traditional bill of review elements because he is challenging jurisdiction in the underlying action?
Well, I do agree that he doesn't have to go to prongs 2 and 3 if he proves a meritorious defense, which would be jurisdiction.
Okay.
But the trial court, he did not present evidence on standing, one at the trial court. I understand it's not a waived issue, but the court did consider jurisdiction and actually asked for additional briefing on subject matter jurisdiction, which previous counsel for appellant and I both provided, and the court still granted summary judgment.
But are you talking about the initial summary judgment or the second summary judgment?
And I know it's confusing. The summary judgment on the bill of review.
Okay.
So this was litigated before the trial court at that level. But I understand that standing cannot be waived, but as an equitable argument, Mr. Amaya has had the chance to bring up this argument since 2006. To be fair to my clients, this case has been going on for almost 14 years. There have been 3 MSJs filed in the case. The first one in 2007 was set aside. The second one in 2009 was granted. It's been in 4 different courts, as y'all understand. He's never been prevented from making that argument at any time. And so from an equitable standpoint, is there an end to when you can assert standing? Maybe there's not. But I don't believe that it's a efficient way to use our judicial resources. I believe we're wasting the court's time here, and we've wasted the county court's time in this case, the federal court, and the 370th district court, who made a proper ruling back in 2009 on the MSJ. And at the end of the day, if the court finds that Bissell Home Care Inc. lacked standing, the judgment still stands as to Bissell Mexico. There's no more recourse for Mr. Amaya at this point. And so I would argue that appellant's bill of review was properly denied. The 2009 summary judgment was properly granted by the district court, and no meritorious defense has been proved by the appellant in this case. And so even if we don't get to the next two prongs, I don't believe that the evidence before the court shows that he even reached the first prong. Does the court have any further questions for me?
No, thank you. We thank appreciate you. You giving the court some time back.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at the hearing on the MSJ, the court said two things. One would be that if there was no jurisdiction, the judgment couldn't be entered, period, and that if, in fact, there is no jurisdiction, then the court takes that up, that you don't even get to negligence or anything else. So the court even agreed that you didn't necessarily have to meet the other two prongs of the bill.
I think Ms. Colvin just agreed with you as well. So.
Well, right. Well, let me just get to the next, or to the bottom of this. You're saying, assuming you're correct on standing of the parent company, that would affect the bill of, you know, the judgment in your favor, that you would get a judgment in your favor in this case because there was a lack of standing in the initial case. How does that, you didn't name the Mexican company subsidiary as a party in your case, so therefore the judgment would still stand, would it not, in favor of Bissell Mexico against your client?
Well, first
off, let's say we ruled in your favor in your case here.
All right. Well, first off, I didn't make that determination the way the bill review was filed in terms of only Bissell USA. Okay.
Well, when I refer to you, I mean your client, yeah. Counsel.
So, well, here, and what we're actually asking for is that, you know, if the issue of whether or not there was jurisdiction was never tried, and so actually part of my prayer in the brief is that it be remanded for trial on the issue of jurisdiction, because if the court finds there's jurisdiction based on the evidence, because that didn't really come up. There was nothing in their MSJ or any proof or anything in the MSJ about jurisdiction. It was just raised as part of our bill of review. And the court, when it granted the motion for the MSJ, doesn't say anything. It just says granted. There was no additional evidence put forth to the court on jurisdiction and so forth. So we wanted a determination on jurisdiction. Now, with respect to what happens to the judgment, well, that's a bit of a nightmare. and I'll tell you why. Since it was, so let's assume that I win or my client wins, and the court either finds there was no jurisdiction to begin with or remands it for determination on whether or not jurisdiction existed, because that was never done.
Jurisdiction existed in regards to the American company.
Well, it can only be right now,
right,
for the American company, because that was the only one that was included in the bill of review.
Sure.
Now, if I had done, I would have argued that the Mexican company didn't have jurisdiction either. Everything happened there. They worked for him there. All the acts took place in Mexico.
They should have sued him in Mexico.
Et cetera, et cetera. But as far as the judgment, if it's granted and we go back down with an order from this court that the trial court needs to make a determination whether or not jurisdiction actually exists. If they find in our favor, there's no jurisdiction. And it only applies to, the bill of review only applies to Bissell USA.
Yeah.
What it does to the judgment, I'm not sure, and here's why. The judgment itself, the underlying one, and then again in the judgment that was submitted on the MSJ and the bill of review case, it doesn't say anything about which company got what damages. It doesn't say joint and several. It says nothing. It just says plaintiff. It doesn't even name the parties. It just says plaintiffs get one point whatever million dollars and so forth and so on. It doesn't say how much Bisel Mexico was damaged. Doesn't say how much Bisel USA was damaged at all, which we say it wasn't. It just brought this whole thing and was driving the ship of their subsidiary, which part of our brief is that they're not allowed to do that anyway. And then in addition to that, where it doesn't separate who got what or what damages or anything like that, it also doesn't say in the order on the motion for summary judgment dismissing the bill review on what causes of action, what theory, completely void of that. It doesn't say, all right, USAA, you win on fraud, Bisel Mexico, you win on embezzlement. It doesn't split it up. So if Bisel USA is out, I don't know what happens to the judgment because it's not clear who got what. It doesn't say anything.
But counsel, wouldn't you have had to have brought in the Mexican company in your underlying bill of review to address exactly that issue, so that the judgment would be clarified and everybody had the opportunity to defend themselves and present their argument of how their interest in the judgment was viable.
Well, if it had been me, for example, and you had the bill review and you met your prongs and you're pleading meritorious defense and the other two prongs, and then you would go to trial, and if it's granted, the bill review granted, then all you do is you go back to the trial court for basically a new trial on the underlying judgment. And at that point, those
bring
issues...
in the Mexican company?
It was already in the underlying, not in the bill of review. But at that point, if the bill of review is granted, what happens when the bill of review is granted? The judgment is taken back. You kind of start over. So if we started over, at that point, with a new trial or whatever, the exact issues you're talking about would have been raised. You would try it, and you'd say,
we can't take back a judgment on Bisel Mexico when it's not before us. I mean, we just can't do that. We don't have jurisdiction to void a judgment of Bisel Mexico because that's not before us. If we were to find, we can only assert a judgment as to, you still have a judgment. Your client would still have a judgment against them as to Mexico.
Correct.
That would still stand. That right. is not before us.
That's what
and
I...
That is not... We're right. not touching that with a 10-foot pole.
Okay.
You're right. But the question was, what those things could have been raised back then. Well, if the bill review had been both and it's granted, mm-hmm. you start over. So the issues of who got what theories and who got how much money, then that would have been raised as you retried mm-hmm. the underlying suit.
Woulda, coulda, shoulda. Let's wrap it up, Mr. Sierra.
Right, well, if it's just granted as to Bisel, and then it goes back to the trial court on Bisel only, then the issues of what Bissell's damages are and what theory they recover on and so forth, those would be the only ones that would be addressed. Now, I don't know what the other side would do. You're right. Both of them probably should have been part of the bill review. They would still have, as far as I can tell, they still have that judgment on behalf of the Mexican company. They might not do anything. They may continue to try and collect, on behalf of the Mexican company, but not Bisel.
Not Bisel USA.
Yeah, they would be out. They wouldn't get anything, just the Mexican company. And that's assuming that you could enforce the judgment the way it was written, which there's law on both sides on that too, because it doesn't differentiate.
Sounds like another battle.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Sherry. Thank you, Ms. Cole.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll take